For decades, the patriots of Eastern Europe fought against communism. Despite the threat of imprisonment and near total censorship, they continued to speak out. They called themselves dissidents. Ultimately, they prevailed against tremendous odds. Now, at long last, American patriots are speaking out against the forces that are destroying this country. This program is the voice of those patriots. This is American Dissident Voices. Your host is Kevin Alfred Strom.
One of this century's greatest crimes, and probably one of the greatest crimes against women in history, was the mass rape of the conquered women of Europe after the Judeo-Communist victory there in 1945. The rapists were mainly Red Army soldiers, some of them non-white troops from the Asian and Middle Eastern republics of the Soviet Union. But I am sorry to say that many of the rapists were men of our own race, and some were Americans. They were brutes, no doubt, but they were permitted and encouraged to indulge their lower-than-bestial urges by official Allied policies, which incited hatred, particularly against the Germans, but also against those of other European nationalities, which were then allied with Germany in an anti-communist bloc. One cannot contemplate this great mass orgy of rape, gang rape, and sexual slavery of innocent women and little girls without revulsion. It will be easy for you to turn your radio dial to another station, where, no doubt, more pleasant or amusing fare is being served up by professional entertainers like Rush Limbaugh or Howard Stern. But if you want to know the truth about one of the darkest secrets of our present establishment, a horrible crime against women, about which the politically correct feminists are strangely silent, then I urge you to turn up the volume and listen carefully. I claim no originality for the documentation or recounting of this ghastly crime, perpetrated mainly by what Franklin Roosevelt called our noble Soviet ally. We are indebted to Dr. Austin J. App, a professor and scholar of English literature at Catholic University, the University of Scranton, and LaSalle College, among others, who risked career and livelihood to bring these truths to light. In April 1946, when he published the work upon which today's program is based, entitled Ravishing the Women of Conquered Europe, he was a lone voice crying out for justice in an America still high on war propaganda and on a victory that in the later Cold War years and after would be seen clearly as a defeat for America and the West as much as it was for Germany.
This is American Dissident Voices. Why don't you write today to the fine radio station that carries this program and let them know that you appreciate their belief in freedom of speech. Remember, the enemies of freedom never rest. Don't let their voices be the only ones this station hears.
As the Red Army advanced toward her in 1945, the city of Berlin had become a city virtually without men. Out of a civilian population of 2,700,000, 2 million were women. It is small wonder that the fear of sexual attack raced through the city like a plague. Doctors were besieged by patients seeking information on the quickest way to commit suicide, and poison was in great demand. In Berlin stood a charity institution the House Dalem, an orphanage, maternity hospital, and foundling home. Soviet soldiers entered the home and repeatedly raped pregnant women and women who had just given birth. This was not an isolated incident. No one will ever know how many women were raped, but doctors' estimates run as high as 100,000 for the city of Berlin alone. Their ages ranging from 10 to 70. On March 24, 1945, our noble Soviet allies entered Danzig. A 50-year-old Danzig teacher reported that her niece, 15, was raped 7 times, and her other niece, 22, was raped 15 times. A Soviet officer told a group of women to seek safety in the cathedral. Once they were securely locked inside, the beasts of Bolshevism entered and, ringing the bells and playing the organ, celebrated a foul orgy through the night, raping all the women, some more than 30 times. A Catholic pastor in Danzig declared, quote, "They violated even 8-year-old girls and shot boys who tried to shield their mothers." Close quote. The Most Reverend Bernard Griffin, British Archbishop, made a tour of Europe to study conditions there and reported, quote, "In Vienna alone, they raped 100,000 women, not once, but many times, including girls not yet in their teens and aged women." Close quote. A Lutheran pastor in Germany, in a letter of August 7, 1945, to the Bishop of Chichester, England, describes how a fellow pastor's, quote, "two daughters and a grandchild, 10 years of age, suffer from gonorrhea as a result of rape," close quote, and how, quote, "Mrs. N was killed when she resisted an attempt to rape her," close quote, while her daughter was, quote, "raped and deported, allegedly to Omsk, Siberia, for indoctrination," close quote. The day after our noble Soviet allies conquered Nice, Silesia, 182 Catholic nuns were raped. In the Diocese of Katowice, 66 pregnant nuns were counted. In one convent, when the Mother Superior and her assistant tried to protect the younger nuns with outstretched arms, they were shot down. A priest reported in Nord America magazine for November 1, 1945, that he knew, quote, "several villages where all the women, even the aged and girls as young as 12, were violated daily for weeks by the Russians," close quote. Sylvester Michelfelder, a Lutheran pastor, wrote in the Christian Century, quote, "Bands of irresponsible bandits in Russian or American uniforms pillage and rob the trains. Women and girls are violated in sight of everyone. They are stripped of their clothes," close quote. On April 27, 1946, Vatican Radio charged that in the Russian occupation zone of eastern Germany, cries of help were going up, quote, "from girls and women who are being brutally raped and whose bodily and spiritual health is completely shaken," close quote. The rapists did not all wear a red star. John Dos Passos, writing in Life magazine for January 7, 1946, quotes a red-faced major as saying that, quote, "lust, liquor, and loot are the soldiers' pay," close quote. A serviceman wrote to Time magazine for November 12, 1945, quote, "many a sane American family would recoil in horror if they knew how our boys conduct themselves with such complete callousness in human relationships over here," close quote. An army sergeant wrote, quote, our own army and the British army have done their share of looting and raping. This offensive attitude among our troops is not at all general, but the percentage is large enough to have given our army a pretty black name, and we too are considered an army of rapists. Close quote. An Italian survivor of American bombing states that black American troops were stationed in Naples, where they were allowed by their superiors free access to poor, hungry, and humiliated Italian women. The result of this interracial rape and sexual slavery was the production of a generation of pitiable mixed-race children, a legacy of the brutal conqueror. According to an Associated Press dispatch of September 12, 1945, entitled German-American Marriages Forbidden, the Franklin Roosevelt government instructed its soldiers that marriage with the inferior Germans was absolutely forbidden. But those having illegitimate children by German women, whose husbands and boyfriends were conveniently dead or held as prisoners or slave laborers, could count on allowance money. And according to Time magazine of September 17, 1945, the government provided these soldiers with an estimated 50 million condoms per month and graphically instructed them as to their use. For all practical purposes, our soldiers were being told, "Teach these Germans a lesson and have a wonderful time." Such were the great crusaders who brought democracy to Europe. For the Americans and British, open rape was not as common as among the Soviet troops. The Soviets simply raped any female from 8 years up, and if a German man or woman killed a Russian soldier for anything, including rape, 50 Germans were killed for each incident, as reported in Time magazine, June 11, 1945. But for most of our boys, having that wonderful time depended a great deal on the cooperation of the German and Austrian women. From the starving and the homeless, of course, sexual cooperation could be bought for a few pennies or a mouthful of food. I don't think we ought to dignify this arrangement with any other than its true name of sexual slavery. The Christian Century for December 5, 1945, reported, quote, "The American Provost Marshal, Lieutenant Colonel Gerald F. Bean, said that rape presents no problem for the military police because a bit of food, a bar of chocolate, or a bar of soap seem to make rape unnecessary." Think that over if you want to understand the situation in Germany. Close quote. The Weekly Review of London for October 25, 1945 described it thus, quote, "Young girls, unattached, wander about and freely offer themselves for food or bed. Very simply, they have one thing left to sell, and they sell it. As a way of dying, it may be worse than starvation, but it will put off dying for months or even years." Close quote. Dr. George N. Schuster, president of Hunter College, wrote in the Catholic Digest of December 1945, after a visit to the American zone of occupation, quote, "You have said it all when you say that Europe is now a place where woman has lost her perennial fight for decency because the indecent alone live." Close quote. By official policy, the Allies created conditions in which the only German mothers who could keep their young children alive were those who themselves or whose sisters became mistresses of the occupying troops. Our own officials admittedly brought the Germans down to a total daily food intake less than that of an American breakfast, a level which leads to slow but sure death unless relieved. According to testimony given in the United States Senate on July 17, 1945, when the colonial French troops under Eisenhower's command, presumably mostly Africans, entered the German city of Stuttgart, they herded German women into the subways and raped some 2,000 of them. In Stuttgart alone, troops under Eisenhower's command raped more women in 1 week than troops under German command raped in all of France for 4 entire years. In fact, of all the major belligerents in World War II, the German troops had by far the smallest record of rape and looting. In fact, the German army's incidence of rape in all of Germany's occupied territories was even lower than that of American troops stationed on American soil. According to the International News Service in London, January 31, 1946, when American soldiers' wives were brought to Germany, they were given special authorization to wear military uniforms because, quote, the GIs did not want their wives mistaken for Fräuleins by other occupation troops, close quote. A writer for the New York World Telegram, January 21, 1945, stated, quote, Americans look on the German women as loot, just like cameras and Lugers, close quote. Dr. G. Stewart, in a health statement submitted to General Eisenhower, reported that in the first 6 months of American occupation, venereal disease jumped to 20 times its former level in Germany. Now, I want you to imagine an orgy of rape like this happening in your country, in your neighborhood, to your family, to your wife, your sister, your daughter. I want you to imagine what it would feel like to be totally powerless to stop it from happening, completely unable to bring the criminals to justice. And I want to ask you, were there ever any war crimes or hate crimes trials of these butchers and rapists and inciters to butchery and rape? We in America are very good at raining smart bombs on our adversaries and in violently enforcing the dictates of the United Nations on faraway peoples that our press have vilified. But we really have been very insulated from the horrors of mass warfare on our own territory. But unless we wake up, we will find that someday the political situation in America will not be to the liking of the international elitists, and we may find foreign troops in blue UN helmets on our shores to correct the situation. They will, of course, be called peacekeeping troops in the macabre newspeak that our would-be masters have created. But their bombs and bullets, I assure you, will kill your family quite as dead as any others. And in the homelands where those peacekeepers hail from, I also assure you that the controlled media will have thoroughly indoctrinated them with a hatred of the nasty Americans who must be put in their place for their sins of questioning the dictates of the New World Order. Just as today we are taught to hate the Iraqis and the Afrikaners of South Africa, just as yesterday we were taught to hate the Germans. Few today remember that in the 1940s, The Allies, who even then were calling their world government in the making the United Nations, were pursuing a policy of unconditional surrender, which meant that the Germans would be obligated to accept an occupation government whose announced intentions, the infamous and genocidal Morgenthau Plan, would have reduced Germany to medieval conditions and cut her population by enforced starvation. Go to any large library and check out Secretary Morgenthau's book, Germany is Our Problem, Harper and Brothers, 1945. You will note the use of the term United Nations on the front flyleaf and in the foreword by Franklin D. Roosevelt. A prominent Jewish writer in America, Theodore Kaufman, had in 1941 written a book entitled Germany Must Perish, which advocated the extermination of all Germans by sterilization. Kaufman's book received favorable reviews in major American magazines and newspapers. Other books, such as Louis Neisser's What to Do with Germany, also contributed to this atmosphere of strident anti-German hatred. War propaganda and official policy combined to create an image of the German as subhuman and deserving of almost infinite punishment, if not annihilation. Churchill said to the Germans in January 1945, quote, "We Allies are no monsters. This, at least, I can say on behalf of the United Nations to Germany. Peace, though based on unconditional surrender, will bring to Germany and Japan immense and immediate alleviation of suffering and agony." Close quote. Against that false claim, the late Dr. Austin App proclaimed the truth. Those Allies, who were no monsters, literally raped more European women than had ever before been raped in the history of the world. They put Germany on a starvation-level diet. Under direct orders from Dwight Eisenhower, they killed more than 1 million German POWs. They looted 12 million people of their homes, goods, food, and even clothes, and drove them from their homeland. They took 1/4 of their farmland. They took their ships and their factories and their farm implements and then told them to live by farming. They abused and starved to death more German babies than there ever were Jews in Germany. They raped and debauched hundreds of thousands of German, Austrian, and Hungarian girls and women from 8 to 80. They brought to their death 5 times as many Germans in 1 year of peace as died during 5 years of war. Yes, yes, of course, these men of the United Nations, these men of the New World Order, are no monsters. Quite apart from any ethnic or ideological considerations, World War II was a war between, on the one side, the elitists who created communism as a way station on the road to their new world order, and, on the other, those who opposed that new world order. It is a tragedy of millennial proportions that America and Britain were induced to fight on the side of communism and communism's masters. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been lied to by those who want to submerge us into their world government. The public schools, the major media, and the government are lying to you. If you want to keep your freedom, You need to wake up. Ravishing the Women of Conquered Europe is just one of 14 booklets and articles by Dr. Austin J. App, collected and published in book form under the title No Time for Silence. No Time for Silence brings together many of Dr. App's rare and out-of-print writings, some of which are seeing the light of day again for the first time in many years. Every article is a treasure house of carefully documented facts and figures which the controlled media have suppressed for decades. These articles are also a plea for justice and humanity for the forgotten victims of war, an appeal to the heart as well as the head. We are proud to offer No Time for Silence to American Dissident Voices listeners as our radio offer number 27. Every listener who contributes $10 or more to keep this truth-telling program on the air will receive a copy of this 143-page book containing not only Dr. App's vital articles, but an important introduction by revisionist scholar Theodore J. O'Keefe. If you'd like to have No Time for Silence on your bookshelf and find out what the controlled media don't want you to know about World War II and many other subjects, just send as large a donation as you think our efforts are worth, a minimum of $10, to National Vanguard Books. Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. And remember to ask for radio offer number 27. Our announcers will repeat that address in a moment. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom saying, do right and fear no one.
You have been listening to American Dissident Voices,
a beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the voluntary support of its listeners to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 for a book and tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute two international reply coupons for the $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high-fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.